Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, you guys have been waiting. Thomas Mott here on a, what is it? Is it Monday night? That's what it is. 12 a.m. It's midnight. And I've been teasing it. I've been teasing it all week. I've been having you guys vote for it on my Twitter account. The reveal of my show. This show, the naming is happening right now. Quickly, a little bit of background. When I first came here just a couple of weeks ago, I didn't have a show name. I didn't really have any ideas. I thought it would just come to me randomly. Then we had our first night, Marshall and I together, and it was like, okay, we couldn't think of one. So then I think I suggested, let's just throw up a Twitter poll and throw up some other polls on my personal social media, and we'll let you guys decide. Now, we had to get some naming suggestions, and you guys went crazy in a good way for all these naming suggestions, tweeting me at Real Thomas Mott, calling in the first couple of shows, and I wrote down, I had 15 names that I thought were good enough to be the name of the show. I had to narrow that down to a top four, and I got it down to a top four, and the top four were the motto, Ready or Mott, Mott Up for Debate, and The Sauce with Mott. Those were my top four. So, yeah, I mean, listen, and of course, coming up, and in right after this right after we reveal the show name, we're going to get back to some Atlanta United audio from Rick and John earlier today talking about Frank DeBoer's comments. That's coming up, but first, we got to get to this. So on Twitter, the winner on Twitter was Ready or Mott by 1%. Now, I put it on my other social media, my private channels, for all my other friends to vote on it, and it was back and forth between the motto and Ready or Mott. Those were the top two everywhere else. On Facebook, one of them won by two votes. On Instagram, the other one won by, it was back and forth. It was crazy. And I was asking all my friends. I was asking my mentors, my parents. And then I figured out the name that I liked more out of those two. And I went to Sean, our assistant producer here, or our assistant program director, excuse me. And I said, Sean, here are the two names. Which one should I pick? He gave his 2 cents. I heeded it. I listened to it. And that was kind of the nail in the coffin. And Sean and I both agreed that the name I liked was the name he liked, and the name that I liked was the name Marshall liked. So, without further ado, the winner, drum roll, let's get a drum roll going. Here we go. The name of my show will be Ready or Mott is the name of my show. There it is. Listen, I know you got a lot of people wanted the motto.
I've chosen wise.
Thank you. That was really good. I didn't know that you were going to play that. A lot of people wanted the motto. A lot of people wanted the motto, and a lot of people that I value their opinion wanted the motto. I worked at Fox Sports in New York on First Things First about a year ago, and I was talking to one of the higher-ups there, and she told me, like, you're ridiculous. Like, it's the motto. You have to pick the motto. And so that happened today after I'd already picked Ready or Mott, and I was like, oh, boy, I don't know. But listen, I like Ready or Mott. I think it has a nice ring to it. You guys voted more for it than everyone else. This was the leading vote-getter on all of my social media channels. But it was very, very close, and so without further ado, it's official. The name of the show is Ready or Mott. Marshall, how do you feel being the producer of Ready or Mott? It's fun, right?
I like it.
You know,
I love it.
And as we go throughout our careers, you know, I mean, show names can change, and you get a new show, blah, 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 but this is my first show name, and I love it. This was not my suggestion. It was a caller who called in and suggested this name. I don't remember who it was. We had so many. But if you were the guy who suggested, I really appreciate it. So now we have an official name for the show. And going forward, we'll have a show Twitter name. We'll have a show Twitter handle, so you can follow that as well. We'll get that up. But everyone who participated in helping me name this poll or name this show, I really, really appreciate it. And just overall, quickly before we get to the United interview, just overall how welcoming everyone has been to me, not just at 92.9 The Game, because everyone I've met inside the studio and while I've been off work and coming inside to talk to bosses and meet people, they've been great. But everyone else who's been listening has really accepted me with arms wide open, not being an Atlanta kid, not from Atlanta, from Texas, moving all the way out here to take this job. And it's been 50 times better than I could have ever expected. So I really, really appreciate everyone voting, and hopefully Ready or Mott becomes kind of a household name, a household show here for you guys, and that way you guys will have something to listen to at night and, of course, in podcast form. It is, all the podcasts are up on the website. They're a little bit hard to find, so I'll tweet it out tomorrow, but we're going to get it to where there'll be a Ready or Mott show page, and you'll just click on that, just like you do for The Bunker Mentality or for all the other shows, John and Hugh and everyone else. You'll have to just go to my show page and listen to my stuff. Before, and if you're listening to The Bunker Mentality before this, right when The Bunker Mentality went off the air, he said he preferred the motto. And I walked in, I was like, oh, Andy, come on, I'm not picking that one. But Andy made a really good point, because his name's The Bunker Mentality, and I was telling Andy and myself quickly, we're like the only two shows on here that have like names for our shows. Everyone else just does the name of their, you know, John and Hugh are popular, so John and Hugh makes sense.
Right, John and Hugh, the morning show, right. Or it Rick and sense. John, midday,
and so Andy,
Dukes and Bell.
Yes, Andy Bunker and I are the two who have like an actual show name. Andy said, listen, people didn't like The Bunker Mentality in the beginning, you know, and all names kind of sound a little bit dumb. But he said, overall, just give it a little bit of time. It'll become so used to it, and you're ready to go. And we're ready to go. Ready or Mott is the name of the show. And again, appreciate everyone tweeting at me. And telling me congrats. Alan Newsome, sounds good to me. I like it. I appreciate it, Alan. I really do. CP3 O'Neill followed me, as long as Jeremy Bell followed me on Twitter. I appreciate that. We're trying to get my Twitter following up because we're here. We're ready to go. We're rocking and rolling. Quickly before we move on, because I got Jacob Brandenburg in about 13 minutes, our CBS reporter. You've heard him before talking Falcons draft and all the draft needs that you could possibly want. He's calling in about 12 minutes. Before we get to that, we have some audio from Rick and John earlier today. It's about a minute and a half talking about Frank DeBoer, talking about Atlanta United. Let's hear what they had to say earlier on. Let's roll the tape.
When I called out Frank DeBoer a week ago, I put a Twitter poll up at JohnMichaels929. You can follow the station at 92.9 The Game, at Rick and John929 on social media. I put it out there and I asked, do we have a Frank DeBoer problem? And 71% said no, give him time. And I heard from soccer experts and everybody else kind of had opinions like, let's just go blow out FC Cincinnati. Whatever happens with Monterey on Wednesday, cool. And then we're going to get into MLS play and we can really focus. There's a serious problem with this team right now. Pity Martinez is a downgrade from Miguel Almirón. He may have been the South American player of the year. His style right now is not meshing with Atlanta United. Maybe 10 matches from now, I'll look back and go, dude, I was wrong about Pity Martinez. I don't think we're wrong about Pity Martinez right now. Frank DeBoer flat out does not mesh with the guys that are on his team. The 3-4-3, it's not the attacking style that we want. Defensively, we've been fairly lax, especially in the CONCACAF Champions League games. The defense has been non-existent in long stretches of the game. But my problem is to go to the connecting passes you talked about. We would have last year where we would be ball dominant, and it would seemingly be, it would be pass, 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 and I always called it the hockey assist. It was the first pass that two passes later led to a Joseph shot or a Gressel shot or an Almirón shot that you're just not getting now. Right now it's just, you know, kick the ball downfield and hope that Joseph can outrun everybody and make a one-on-one play. Or it's Barco and Martinez, talking about Pity, trying to dribble through people and they lose the ball. That has to change.
Well, the dribbling through people and trying to – I've been complaining about that since I started watching soccer critically with this team. Shoot the rock. Mm-hmm. Just please, for the love of God, just shoot it. We got PT actually shot a ball from the left side. John, I don't know. I was on the opposite end of the stadium, but it was well beyond the box. Well, and it was saved. Right. But what he tried to do was get a little skipper in right. there, like a little short hop, and maybe it eats up the goalie, and maybe you get a cheap goal on it. Okay, mm-hmm. I like the decision, even though there was a very, very small percentage that he scored on that play.
Right.
Shots on net. And but we're not even getting to that point. We're not, you know, last year, John, it would set up, you get it, at the top of the box, a guy would, like, do that little turn move and then shoot. Or you get those beautiful, majestic Gressel crossing passes, and Joseph just dives ahead with his forehead and knocks it into the net. I'm hanging in there, John, but Sunday's loss was critical for me.
That was, of course, our own midday show, Rick and John, reacting to Frank DeBoer. And if we have a Frank DeBoer problem, and listen, I was going at this with my roommate back and forth about the 3-4-3 and how it's a little bit more defensive. It's not the attacking style. Marshall, I'll bring you back in here. You're a big United fan. React to what you heard right there. Do you agree with the majority of what Rick and John said on their show today? Is that Do we have a Frank DeBoer problem, or do we just kind of have a slight Frank DeBoer problem? Where are you at in all this?
I think it's a slight Frank DeBoer problem.
Not a full on.
So Frank comes from Ajax in the Netherlands and that European style of soccer. And they build up slow from the back and they don't rely on the fast break. They're more about set pieces and things of that nature to get their goals and really more, I think, of a technical game. And whereas Atlanta United the past two seasons is all about hitting guys in open space and finding that breakaway to be able to just outrun your opponent and get that quick goal. And that's not the way Frank is setting this team up. However, that's what this team knows.
Right.
And I go back to the adjustment thing. I go back to, Darren Eales came over from Tottenham. I'm a big Tottenham fan. But again, it's that European style of football,
yeah,
soccer. And they do things differently. You just got to adjust.
Well, and the 3-4-3 has worked really well in the Premier League. It's not like it's some formation. And again, if you're not fully up to date on soccer formations, I mean, it's not your fault because it's a hard thing. There are so many different formations. But the 3-4-3 Chelsea had a lot of success with 3-4-3 in the Premier League a couple years ago. It's not like it's some bad formation. It's like Frank De Boer's brought in this garbage formation that just would never work in soccer. It works in soccer, but like you say, it's not really working with the guys we have in the field right now. We had a caller in hour number one talk about putting a square peg into a round hole. And I feel like that's kind of where we're at right now. The thing is, though, this is what I think Frank DeBoer, where he's going to rub people the wrong way, is he is very set in his ways. And he might not be willing to make a lot of changes because a lot of coaches come in my way or the highway, and we're going to ride this one out. So if he turns it around, gets a win on Sunday, plays well against Monterrey on Wednesday, I think we can start to turn this around. But if we continue to struggle and we continue to lose, how much longer will we be able to put up with Frank DeBoer's stubbornness and his style of play? That's a question I don't have the answer to. I think you guys are going to have to decide for yourselves. Give him a little bit more time. I agree with Marshall. We're early. It's still early. We're 1-1, right? 1-0-1 technically in MLS.
And look, and it's not something a lot of us are used to seeing.
Sorry,
0-1-1. Yes. And it's not, this is a style of play that a lot of us are not used to seeing. And I say us generically. I watch a decent amount of Premier League.
Right.
But a lot of people out there are just fans of Atlanta United or MLS fans or maybe the men's national team. And for them, that's where soccer ends. But this is not an uncommon style of play. And this is just something, this is just that next step of learning for everybody involved, for the players, for the fans, for everybody.
And we can't blow it up yet, obviously. We can't panic yet, but we can get a little, just a little bit of concern. Carefully watch body language on Wednesday. Carefully watch body language on Saturday. Because as long as the players are bought into it, where I'm not sold, Joseph Martinez, I'm not sold that he is. If the players stay bought into it, then they will be just fine. Jacob Brandenburg, CBS reporter, coming up in after this break, Falcons draft. We're going to get into that. Don't go anywhere. This is Ready or Mock. I recognize this song. I've heard this song before. This is a Dave Matthews Band. Okay, I have heard the Dave Matthews Band. Very good.
This is Ants Marching.
Okay, see, I have heard this song. All right, we're back here on the newly named show. It's Ready or Mott. I'm your host, Thomas Mott. Marshall Parker, my producer. 12:22 Eastern time, and we need to get into the NFL draft, and there's no one better that I know to bring on Jacob Brandenburg. He covered two Baylor Pro Days at Baylor. He also was a color analyst for the Baylor at Sports Radio, and now is a CBS reporter in Texas. Jacob, welcome on to Ready or Mott. How are you?
Hey, buddy. I love the rejoin with the Dave Matthews Band.
Okay.
What's that about?
Okay, so then you are a Dave Matthews fan because, listen, Marshall's been playing. First off, do you know the band 311?
Yeah, I do know them.
Okay. See, I obviously did not, and I had – not I couldn't name a Dave Matthews song, but I did recognize that one we just rejoined back with. But you obviously know who you know who that is, right?
Yes, yes. Big fan of the Dave Matthews Band. Some people might criticize me for that, but yes, love a lot of what they do.
Okay, so you have been getting your study on for the NFL draft. You've been looking at what the Falcons need. I know last time we talked, you're a big guy, a big fan of Ed Oliver, and I think a lot of people think he's going to be there at 14, but I wanted to kind of talk about the other guys other than Ed Oliver. Before we do that, though, a lot of articles are saying Ed Oliver's combine weight of 287 is going to make him a lot more desirable. I'm under the impression that he's not going to play at 287, and that worries me a little bit because he's really small. Does that worry you at all?
Well, that's the problem, is that you would have liked to see him actually, you know, run and take part in drills at the combine, because it's that deal where, yeah, he might have just gained, because people thought he might be closer to like 270 pounds. He came at the combine more like 290. So obviously prove people wrong that he's not small, but what's his athleticism like at that size? Because I'm sure when he, after he runs and does the shuttles and the cone drills and things like that at like the Houston Pro Day, he's not going to weigh in that day. He's going to stick with the weight from the combine. So he might put up some impressive times there, but yeah, you're right. His play size, I don't know for sure what he would be at, although, I mean, I've always believed that he is bigger, I think, than what people say. I mean, there's some people who think he'd play maybe because of how athletic he is, he could be like a 270-pound or 260-pound inside linebacker. I don't think that's the case. I think whoever gets him is going to use him as a D-tackle, as a DN, and I think he'll be able to keep his weight at an appropriate level for those positions.
So if Ed Oliver's not there at 14, or let's say the Falcons do their pre-draft process and they interview Ed Oliver and they just decide, you know what, we're going to go a different direction. This is a heavy defensive line draft. Who would you like to see the Falcons go for? Would you rather an edge rusher? Would you rather another defensive tackle? This is a strong edge rusher class. Who do you think could be there at 14? Who do you like at 14 for the Falcons if it's not at Oliver?
Well, as far as 14 at that deep tackle spot, I think he's your best value at that area. Obviously, if you could get a guy like probably a Rashawn Gary would probably be the best option. The Michigan defensive end, D tackle, is kind of that tweener where he's, you know, 6'5", 280. You can play him in a lot of different spots. He's, of course, super athletic. If he were to fall and land there at the Falcons at 14, that would certainly be a great option. Otherwise, as far as the D tackles, I don't know. You look at Dexter Lawrence or Christian Wilkins, the two Clemson D tackles. 14 is maybe a little earlier than where you'd like to be taking either of them. So unless they were to trade back to try to get value that way, drafting one of those guys, I think that's at the point then we look and see who is it that you can get there on the edge. If someone like Montez Sweat, the Mississippi State D-end pass rusher, or if Brian Burns, the Florida State edge rusher, both those guys, of course, very rangy, very long arms, both incredibly athletic, both ran very fast, 40 times with the combine. If one of them were to fall, that's where instead of, I think, going with a D-tackle, you get an extra edge rusher to either pair with Tack McKinley and Vic Beasley or replace one of those guys.
Yeah, see, listen, a lot of people want a defensive tackle to put next to Grady Jarrett, which I think is fine, but there are so many good edge rushers in this draft. If one falls to you, I'm totally okay with drafting another edge rusher and just rotating them in. Vic Beasley has had one really good year in the past couple, and I'm fine with essentially drafting his replacement if one were to fall later in this draft. A lot of mock drafts have Atlanta going with an offensive tackle. The one they keep saying is the Alabama one, Jonah Williams. I know you like him. At 14, I keep telling people, is a very, it's a tough place to be because you're early enough to where you need to hit, right? Like if you're sitting back at 20 or 25, it's not as for sure, but 14 still early enough. Would you rather Atlanta go offensive lineman, offensive tackle, and help protect Matt Ryan, or are the defensive ends, like we keep saying, is defense too good in this draft to pass up on?
Well, yeah, because I'm a Packers fan, so Packers are two spots ahead of the Falcons at 12, so I've been going over the, kind of that same thing with myself. Is they really need a pass rusher as well, so it's the same thing where I think there's so much talent on the defensive side of the ball that you can't pass up. The good thing, if you're a Falcons fan, is D-line, O-line, probably your two biggest needs, both incredibly deep positions. So you're still going to get good players at either spot in the second and the third round if you choose to make picks there. That's the good news. And, I mean, I there's a reason so many mock drafts that you guys look at have Ed Oliver there. It just makes so much sense because it seems like that's where he's going to get drafted in the order of everybody. And he's so disruptive. I think people saw with the Rams this past year, if you have somebody like Aaron Donald and Sue in the middle, that interior pressure from the inside, that's going to be the new thing, I think, in the league to try and slow down some of these offenses. If you had somebody like Grady Jarrett and put him with an Ed Oliver, who again is a tremendous player every time I've watched him. I love just how disruptive he can be in the run game and in the pass game. I think that would be really hard from the pass. I mean, I think Dan Quinn would find a way to really use him to his best ability, even if he is maybe a little smaller than what you'd like at D tackle.
Jacob Brandenburg, CBS reporter down in Texas. Jacob, give me some later round names, some names that day two, day three, we can be sitting here, and not just Atlanta drafting him, but anyone who you think is, they're going to go later, they won't be a first-round pick, but could really jump off the board and make an impact on a team early on in 2019.
Well, I think looking at the D-line spot, I think you've got, we'll start with Jeffrey Simmons, who's a D-tackle out of Mississippi State. He's a guy who, I think, drawn comparisons. He's about 6'5", 300 pounds, drawn comparisons to a guy like Fletcher Cox from the Eagles or Ndamukong Suh, guys like that. Of course, he tore his ACL getting ready for the combine, so he's probably a guy that you'll have to draft and probably sit a year kind of redshirt this next season. But he's a guy that would have been a top-10 pick probably had he not gotten hurt. So that's a nice value you could pick up in the second round or maybe even later. Jerry Tillery is a guy from Notre Dame who I really, really like, who's, again, super tall, 6'6", 6'7", about 280 pounds. You can play him in kind of a variety of spots. I think he's another guy that you could get a little later on. Because, again, we were talking about the Atlanta Falcons and then the offensive linemen there. There's a lot of guys. There's a few guys that will go in the first round, but I think look at the offensive line. You've got Yanni Kajust is a guy from West Virginia. Obviously, they threw the ball a lot. He's a very good pass protector, very strong, very long arms, really everything you'd kind of want out of a left tackle prospect. And then you look, Oklahoma, Wisconsin each have about three guys you could get in the second or third round. And then there's a guy named Greg Little, who's the Ole Miss left tackle, was a number one tackle coming out of high school, played there kind of as the replacement for Laramie Tunsil as Ole Miss's left tackle. He's a guy had a terrible combine, kind of similar to what Orlando Brown from Oklahoma did last year, where guy goes to the combine, is terrible, and some teams might be turned off by that. But then you look, Orlando Brown still got drafted by the Ravens, started at right tackle for them all year, and they were one of the best rushing teams in the league. So a guy like Greg Little, Ole Miss, is somebody you could get a little later as an offensive or as an offensive lineman.
Do you see Josh Rosen being traded before night one and Cliff Kingsbury taking Kyler Murray at number one? It's the debate everyone's talking about. A lot of people say it's going to happen. Do you see that happening? Because I think, I mean, you got to find a trade partner for Rosen first, and then that would set up to drafting Murray at one. Do you see it happening?
I mean, it certainly seems like it would happen. And a lot of the talk this week, I think, is people have kind of realized, that this is an actual possibility, is how appealing Rosen is for a team. Because you look at his contract, you've got him there still for, I think it's 3 years with an option for another one, and he's only going to cost you $2 million a year, which in the NFL is absolutely nothing. So if you're a team, especially if you're in need of a new starter like the Redskins or the Dolphins, where you need a quarterback, that they should certainly be looking at him. And even if you're a team that needs a backup like the Chargers or the Giants or the Patriots, where you kind of need that next quarterback of the future, you can get him for so cheap. It would be shocking if the Cardinals want to trade him that no one would give up, I think, a good price to get him, because he would be such a good deal for a player I still think can be a good quarterback in this league.
Quickly, we have about 3 minutes. I'm going to shift just a little bit to free agency. I got into a little bit of an argument with the official Atlanta Falcons SB Nation Twitter account regarding Nick Foles going to the Jacksonville Jaguars. A lot of people saying $50 million guaranteed is a lot of money, but Foles is going to go to Jacksonville, a four-year deal, $88 million total. Are you good with the deal? Do you think the Jacksonville Jaguars made the right move, or did they overpay for the Super Bowl MVP?
I don't know. That seems, Thomas, to me, kind of like overpaying for Nick Foles. Again, you don't know necessarily what you're getting with him. I think the Eagles did such a good job of playing to his strengths with Doug Peterson and the coaching staff there, that when Carson Wentz went down the last 2 years, that they really kind of catered things to Nick Foles, and that was part of why he did so well there. I think it'll be interesting to see the Jaguars coaching staff. Obviously, offensively, they haven't shown that they're very, very strong on that side of the ball, and what they'll be able to do. Of course, you'd think the formula would be the same one the Eagles won the Super Bowl with: play great defense. Nick Foles doesn't have to do that much to win games, but that's a hefty contract, the 4 years. It's clearly an investment in Nick Foles as their guy, and now I wonder if they'll pick a quarterback in the draft at all, or if they're gonna ride with your guy Nick Foles.
Well, we'll see again. Yeah, I mean, I'm always been a big Nick Foles fan. I think that the Jags did the right thing. But people on Twitter, Falcohawks Twitter account, love them. I love their stuff, but they were not happy with my praise of that one. That's Jacob Brandenburg again, the CBS reporter down in Texas. Jake, really appreciate you coming on, being the first caller on the newly named show, Ready or Mod. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Anytime.
All right, Jacob. All right, that again, Jacob Brandenburg, and you can follow him on Twitter. And again, it's a little bit of a different way to spell Jacob, at JAKOB_CBS7. Listen, I Jacob hit a lot of things there about who the Falcons can take and what they can do later on. The main point I take away is that it's deep on the offensive line and deep on the defensive line. And at 14, if I was the Falcons, and I'm Thomas Dimitroff, I am taking the best defensive lineman available, and I wouldn't necessarily... We'll see what they do. The draft, it's still... It's over a month away. We'll see what they're going to do. Coming up, Major League Baseball. They might have a nightmare on their hands. Everything could be changing. We'll tell you why. We'll tell you what's up. Don't go anywhere. It's Ready or Mod. Back here on Ready or Mod, I'm Thomas Mott, 12:41 Eastern Time here, right in the middle of hour number two. Again, we're with you for one more hour after this until 2 a.m. Marshall Parker joining me. Marshall?
Please tell me you know who this is.
Oh, man. I've heard the song. Who is this?
This is Rage Against the Machine.
Okay. I have heard this before. Yes. I'm not totally incompetent when it comes to music, Marshall. But I'm not making a very good case for it. So, go ahead and laugh. Go ahead. It's fine. Again, thanks to Jacob Brandenburg for coming on in the previous segment, talking a little bit about options for the Falcons at 14. And quickly, before we move on to this baseball story I have in front of me, I got into a little bit in an argument, just a little bit of a tussle with the Falcoholics on Twitter. You know, of course, they're an excellent website. I use their articles all the time. I really, really appreciate them. But they kind of badmouth Nick Foles a little bit, and I've been a Nick Foles guy for a long time. I think what he did for Philadelphia over the past 2 years is one of the greatest runs a quarterback has done coming off of the bench, if not the greatest. And the poise and the skill set and being able to lead a team that was on the top and then at the bottom when Wentz went down and coming back. So I defended him a little bit. I'm proud of it. And they didn't respond after my defense. So it's fine. I think the Jags did the right thing. It's the best quarterback that they could have gotten in free agency, for one. I saw Booger McFarland today said that the Jags should have taken Teddy Bridgewater over Nick Foles. It makes absolutely no sense unless you wanted to just save money at the quarterback position and put a Band-Aid over a glaring wound. Nick Foles was the right choice because, again, the Jags picking at 7, Haskins and Murray are both going to be gone, and I don't think anyone else has really sold on Drew Lock. So Jacksonville, they did the right choice. Nick Foles is a leader. They have the pieces there. They have a good defense. They have a good running game as long as Fournette stays healthy. And I think they have a coach that can work with Nick Foles. And, of course, his old quarterback coach, DeFilippo, is down there now as the OC. So I predict a lot of success for Nick Foles. Okay, earlier.
You have chosen wisely.
Yes, you did, Jacksonville. I think you did. You have chosen wisely. Great choice there, Marshall. Tease this in the last segment. There's a rule floating around in baseball that they are testing out, a new change that could really change baseball as we know it, Marshall. This is a Bleacher Report article talking about moving the pitching mound back. The quote of the article is by Jacob Schaefer of Bleacher Report. Said, would moving the mound back be baseball's worst rule experiment? And we've talked about this a little bit before, you and I, off the air. The mound has been the same at its what it's
60 feet, 6 inches
for years. Now, they lowered it in 1968. They lowered the mound, but it's been 60 feet, 6 inches. Two, I think people are kind of not fully aware of the impact this would have on the game overall. not just from a pitcher's standpoint, because it obviously affects the pitchers, and they have to change, you know.
I think that the biggest change is going to be for the pitchers.
Okay, so you say it's for the pitchers. I think it's going to affect hitting a lot.
Oh, no. Yes, it will.
I mean, obviously, it's give or take. It's either. I mean, both can be affected. But so you think pitching is affected more, which makes sense, because the pitchers are the ones on the mound, but why?
Because of their mechanics.
Yes, okay.
Because everything changes when you change the distance of the mound from the rubber to home plate.
Yes.
I mean, like everything, because the effects that their pitches have changes, and the breaks that happen in those pitches, even on a fastball, that fastball, even though it doesn't break much, it's still breaking as far as it's actually sloping down. That's going to change. It's going to be more dramatic and more expressed over that greater distance. And I think they want to move it back like 6 feet or something.
Is that what it was? Because I scanned the article before we came on. I scanned the article before we came back from break. And it doesn't say exactly where it wants to. I think I'm seeing 70 feet. But a couple people saying that, quote, 70 feet is terrifying. There's no way it'd be 10 feet back. It doesn't say in the article exactly how far back they want to do it. It would be a couple of feet.
Yeah. Yeah, it would.
It would be 10 feet. It's ridiculous. But it'd be, you know, it'd go from 66 inches to 61, 62. I mean, the article doesn't say. And again, baseball's going to implement this into their tester league. It's called the Atlantic Baseball League.
Right. And they've got 12 teams?
I think they have 8 teams. They're going to try to expand to 12. They've been playing baseball in this. It's like a post-MLB league if you never heard of it. So if you're done in the MLB, it's not like a go here to get into the league. It's go here after the league and still make some money playing baseball. But they're going to test it there. What the article gets into, and I think this is interesting, is not just how much fastballs are going to be affected. Because hitting a fastball, it'll be slower. So therefore, you could have better timing from a hitting perspective. But this is a big advantage for off-speed pitches that have a lot of movement.
Yeah.
Your curveballs are having that much more time to curve. Your sliders are having that much more time to slide, essentially, right? And so you're looking at... And off-speed pitches are the pitch, right? I mean, everyone wants to throw 100 miles an hour, but so many people can.
Right.
Not everyone can have the control of a great curveball or a great slider.
And that's the big thing, is getting the mechanics down to affect the break and create this massive amount of movement in such a very short period of time with your pitch to completely fool hitters. That's going to be the biggest change, I think. And not only that, there's more. It's not just about winding up and throwing your arm as hard as you can and the ball as hard as you can.
Right.
Like there are so many minute details and mechanics involved in those specialty pitches that all of that's going to change. And these guys have been, you know, perfecting this and learning this for some of them decades.
And I think that's probably the nail in the coffin on this rule, because you'd probably have so much pushback from big name players. If this rule goes into the Atlantic League and they like it and they somehow move it into the MLB. Now, obviously, this is not saying it's going to happen anytime soon, because they have to test it in their tester league. But if they were to move it to the MLB and then, you know, week one, you have Clayton Kershaw come out and say, look, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I absolutely hate it, and this is bad for baseball, then you have a problem. You'd have to, if you were going to implement it, you would have to have the big-name pitchers, the Keuchels, the Syndergaards, the Clayton Kershaws of the world. They would all have to be okay with this. And again, there's so many different changes that would have to happen. Strikeouts topped at 40,000 for the second consecutive season in 2018 and 2017. So strikeouts are already at an all-time high. And we just talked about the movement changes. This might add more strikeouts, and I don't know if people
I don't know. Would first of all, how many pitchers are going to want to stick around if they actually implement this?
Right.
Because that's just...
See, and that's the thing that we got to keep reiterating, is it's not like they're going to implement this in 2019. They're going to test it out.
Right.
And I think they're going to test out to see if it makes the game, A, quicker, and B, more exciting.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's
what's... But I don't know that there's not, that it would necessarily create more strikeouts. Let's say, for instance, let's just say, hypothetically, all the current starting pitchers and relievers and everybody, let's say they implement this next year.
Okay.
Not going to happen. This is all hyperbole.
Hypothetical.
Let's say they implement this next year and everybody is down for it. And okay, all right, we're going to do this. Nobody's going anywhere. We're all on board. Okay. I don't know that. Well, okay. So are the pitchers going to rely less on fastballs? Are they going to rely more on specialty pitches like curves and sliders and sinkers and knuckleballs? I don't know.
I don't know either. And I guess that's what you can see in the in this tester league. Also, some of the article mentions is Tommy John injuries. And now, you know, if you're not trying to throw 100 miles an hour every single day, then you might be able to because you physically like can't from that distance.
Right.
So then you might be able to have guys more work on their off-speed pitches, therefore less Tommy Johns. But Tommy Johns and the statistics are there. It's been going down in recent history. It's not like we had a Tommy John epidemic, and it's been going down.
It has.
So it's not like, I mean, obviously we still had like 86 people have Tommy John surgery last year, but it's been going down from where it's been. So
there was one other really interesting thing in this article, and that was they're going to test out robo umpires.
Yes.
As far as like calling balls and strikes.
And then we could get into that for another 30 minutes. I mean, that is very interesting. I mean, again,
I'm not necessarily opposed to that.
I'm not either, because I think we need to get 100% right, but I think also it's fun to have different umpires have different personalities and they call games differently. These are very big changes that, again, we're going to try out in this sub-MLB league and see what happens. Coming up in just a couple minutes, J-Rod, A-Lo, Tim Tebow, how are these guys all connected? And what was happening on Twitter with all three of them involved? Keep it right here. Don't go anywhere. This is Ready or Mod on 929 The Game. Oh, man. Oh, you're making me want to go. You are so fast. We were just talking about this during the break, Game of Thrones.
Look, I, working the morning show this morning, I discovered that on our little program on our computer screen that runs everything,
yeah.
Hugh actually has a little hotkey over here that's
four,
got it programmed.
Four Game of Thrones?
Yeah, this
wow.
Whole intro is in there. But not only that, I had actually snagged a copy of it the other day and stashed it in my folder on the hard drive.
Right
so
on.
That and that was before I saw this was here.
That is the great Marshall Parker. I'm Thomas Mott. This is Ready or Mott. Before we reset for the top of the hour, we need to talk about what happened on Twitter with Jose Canseco, but I'm going to push it back just because you brought up Game of Thrones, and I have just recently started watching, and my old roommate when I was in Waco before I came here told me, Thomas, just give it a try, because I'm the kind of guy, I don't watch a lot of TV. And I'm not a mainstream, like everyone loves The Office. And I didn't watch it for so long that I finally came back and I tried season one and season two. It was fine. And I wasn't like head over heels like everyone else's. So I decided to give Game of Thrones a try, and season one was kind of boring. And it was okay. And then I got really hooked, and I think I'm on season four now. Again, if you're before me, just mute us for a second, because I'm gonna say some Game of Thrones today. I'm trying to remember what just happened. Oh yeah, okay, this is a big spoiler. So if you're not to season four yet, Turn off your radio. Just turn it off. I'm going to say it. 3, 2, 1. Here we go. I just watched Joffrey die.
Oh,
blew
nice.
My mind. I could not. I knew he was going to, but I didn't know it was going to happen that early in that season. So.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is all the things that I heard people talk about, like the Red Wedding, when it happened live, and I wasn't watching. I was like, what is that? And now I understand what it is. So you play Game of Thrones, the theme song, as we come back from our break.
I loved that episode.
It's a good episode. And he got what he deserved when he died. Oh, I know. What a fun character to play, though. Like,
oh, yeah.
Literally be the biggest D-bag in the world and do it for four seasons. I mean, man, what a good actor. It was fun. The one thing, though, because I hear it quickly before we go to reset for hour number three, the Game of Thrones theme song, the opening credit roll is so long. It's like pain forward through it all the time, and my show will lag. Oh, it drives me nuts. So this song comes on, I'm like, fast forward. Okay, I want to watch. Anyway, we're going to get to this Twitter beef between Jose Canseco and Jennifer Lopez and Alex Rodriguez when we reset for the top of the hour.
And
it's
Tim
supposed
Tebow.
To be there.
Tim Tebow's involved in this.
If you haven't heard this story, you got to listen for this. When we reset at the top of the hour, we got to get right into that. Don't go anywhere. Here we go. Reset. It's Ready or Mod at 929 The Game.
T T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.